There is no clock in baseball, and most of the time most players and most fans regard that as one of the game's charms. But as April 18, 1981 gave way to April 19th, lots of the players and fans involved in the game taking place in Pawtucket, Rhode Island, began to wonder if maybe a buzzer or a bell indicating the time had run out would have been a good idea. In Bottom of the 33rd, subtitled Hope, Redemption, and Baseball's Longest Game, New York Times columnist Dan Barry tells the story of that long, cold, unresolved encounter between the Pawtucket Red Sox and the Rochester Red Wings. Dan Barry joins me now from NPR's New York Bureau. Welcome to Only a Game.
Thanks for having me.
Obviously, nobody knew when that game on Easter Eve in 1981 began that it would be the longest ever, but does it seem to you marvelously ironic that the game didn't even begin on time?
That's right. In retrospect, people really ponder that, but you're exactly right. The game was supposed to start at 7:30 on Holy Saturday night, which was also Passover, but the ancient lights were malfunctioning, and one went out. And then another one went out, sort of like a Morse code of failure, and a technician named Killer went into the electrical room and jiggered around with some knobs and stuff, and was able to get one of the lights back on, so they were able to play. But that didn't happen until 8 o'clock.
The Pawtucket Red Sox and Rochester Red Wings played 32 innings over the course of 8 hours. When researching material for this book, did you get a sense of when somebody in one of the dugouts might have first turned to a teammate and said, "Boy, this game is taking forever"?
Yes. Now, the conditions weren't exactly welcoming. It was very cold that night. But around the 15th inning or so, there was a comfort in knowing that baseball has a curfew, that it's written in the rules. The curfew is usually 12:50 a.m. And unfortunately, for some reason, that particular year, 1981, in the rules and regulations for the International League, the specific paragraph allowing for a curfew fell out of the text. It, like, fell onto the floor and rolled under a table, and it was not there. And so no one was really aware of this except the three umpires on the field. And so around 12:45, you know, the game is tied, it's cold, let's go home, it's already Easter Sunday. The manager said, "All right, well, we're done, right?" And the umpire said, "It ain't in my book, there's no curfew, we keep playing." And then around the 17th or 18th inning, the players began to say, "Hey, isn't there a curfew?" And then it was and then it was revealed to them that there is no curfew tonight, gentlemen. We're going to keep playing.
The players who participated in this game that lasted 33 innings were not certainly well-known at the time. They were on their way up to the major leagues, but some of them certainly have become well-known. What are the best examples?
Sure. Well, we can take two of them who made it to the Hall of Fame, which is pretty extraordinary. One is Wade Boggs, who got his chance with the Boston Red Sox in 1982 when Carney Lansford was injured. And Boggs goes on to hit more than 3,000 hits. He becomes perhaps the best hitter of his generation, whereas in 1981 he really wasn't considered much of a prospect. And then his Rochester counterpart at third base that night was Cal Ripken Jr., who was 20 years old. And, you know, part of baseball royalty, his father was Cal Ripken Sr., and Cal had grown up, you know, in and around Memorial Stadium, and I think even the cleats he was wearing that night might have been a gift from Frank Robinson. But you never know, you know, injury, you never know what will happen in the AAA. And, of course, we now know that Cal Ripken, the following year, actually that year, maybe a month or two after the end of the longest game, is called up to Baltimore, and he stayed quite a while, as I understand.
Set the record for most consecutive games played.
He did, at shortstop, and not at third base.
By the time the game had reached, oh, say, the 27th or 28th inning, how many fans were still around?
As best as I can tell, at the game's beginning, there were 1,740 fans. By the 27th inning or so, there was maybe 20, and maybe a couple of cops freezing in the corners of the field. But that's it.
Was it the fact that the game trailed over into Easter morning that suggested the use of the word redemption in the subtitle of your book?
I have to say that it did. You know, I'm a struggling Irish Catholic, and I think about these things. But the idea that the game is played on Holy Saturday night and it tips into Easter Sunday morning, deep into Easter Sunday morning, and what you have on the field are men brought together from all over the country, and they all share the same goal, which is to get to the next step. And of course, the fellow who wins the game, Dave Koza, he drives in the winning run sometime later, let's say. He never makes it to the major leagues. He becomes a truck driver. He develops an alcohol problem. He overcomes that alcohol problem. He's in recovery, 15 years sober. And to me, that is the redemptive part, mm-hmm. how you define yourself as a human being.
The game almost ended in the 27th inning, courtesy of a ball hit by Sam Bowen of the Paw Sox. Please read your description of that circumstance, beginning on the bottom of page 163.
Certainly. But then the Rochester pitcher, Umbarger, makes a mistake in his next pitch to the man who almost played for the Detroit Tigers. A ball right down the middle, and you just don't do that with Sam Bowen at the plate. He gets all of it. The sound of bat meeting ball cracking over the radio like a thunderclap. "Uh-oh," says Bob Drew, the broadcaster. The ball rockets out of the infield, bound for some distant place well beyond the left field wall. "Over the light tower," Wade Boggs will say. When he hit it, everyone was like, "All right," Pawtucket's clubhouse joker Mike Angarado will say. A lot of the players on the field put their heads down, Rochester's catcher Dave Huppert will say. They really thought it was over. A lot of them probably wished it was.
I wonder if the outfielder on that play, John Hale, was trying to will that ball over the fence, just as everybody else in the park certainly was.
I know. And what happened there was, of course, Bowen, who had a lot of power, he really could hit the ball, and he hit it long. Hale just turned around, and he thought it was out. And then suddenly it is as though the ball hit an invisible wall, and it just sort of just glided down, and Hale just turned around, and it came into the basket of his glove. And I can't say that even Rochester was happy with the out.
Does the conclusion after 33 innings strike you as artistically satisfactory?
You know, the game is suspended, which is wonderful. The game is suspended on Easter Sunday morning at 4 o'clock. Joe Morgan says when he was a kid, he was told that on Easter Sunday morning, the sun dances on the horizon. And as Morgan told me, negatory, not true. People were exhausted. They weren't filled with, "Oh, we just played 8 hours." They were beat. And so I do find it satisfying. I find it satisfying that it ended in 18 minutes. You know, what had taken 8 hours now ended in 18 minutes. When no one was there watching those 8 hours, now there's 6,000, and it lasts, you know, as long as it takes you to get a glass of beer at the concession stand. And the fact that Koza hits the single that wins the game over Cal Ripken's head. You know, everybody remembers Cal Ripken. No one really remembers Dave Koza. And so, to me, there is a sweetness and an art to it.
Dan Barry wrote Bottom of the 33rd, Hope, Redemption, and Baseball's Longest Game. It's published by Harper, and the author joined me from NPR's New York Bureau. Dan, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thanks very much for having me.
Only a Game is produced by Karen Given and Doug Trabu. Our technical director is John Perotti. Our intern is Mark Filippino, and our senior producer is Gary Wallach. To view our photo gallery, subscribe to the Only a Game podcast, listen to archived shows and stories, or learn more about our weekly music selections, please visit our website, onlyagame.org. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Only a Game Radio. Our final word comes from Bottom of the 33rd author Dan Barry, who observes that the players in the longest baseball game ever wanted just one thing.
They all wanted to go home.
Echoes of George Carlin. Didn't he say baseball is all about coming home? I'm Bill Littlefield. Thanks for listening. I'm going home. I'll see you next week.
Support comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at mecfound.org. The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, committed to helping Americans lead healthier lives and get the care they need, on the web at rwjf.org. And the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world, on the web at hewlett.org. This is NPR.